The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you. In which our heroes draw a card.
Have a mystery box.
Cheers.
Greetings, listener, and welcome to the drawing for the 30th episode of The Big Red Couch. I am going to scuff around inside the contents of the mystery box and hope to draw out something, well...
cool? Hopefully
yeah.
Cool.
Not moist or anything.
I got a new box because of the moist.
Oh, good, good.
And the noisome.
Excellent. Okay, and what I have found is... this comes to us from Just Dave and the Thursday Night Gamers of Montreal. Apollo Rising.
Yay!
All right.
Getting kind of a disaster movie feel off that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
right, well, thank you, Just Dave and the Thursday Night Gamers.
See you soon.
Bye.
Some days later.
Yeah, it's, I think I'd read little bits of it, enough to know that it looked interesting. And then when I tracked down the actual thing and read it, and it's just, what?
The little bits didn't come together at all.
Oh!
Or at least they were starting to get there by even more what the fuck.
There was a lot of what the fuck, yes.
I have read comics based on actual fever dreams that made more sense than that.
I think it's part of Garth Ennis' ongoing campaign of psychological warfare against the comics industry, which has annoyed him for so long.
He's just deliberately making these incomprehensible, bizarre, testicle-based comics in the hope that somebody will stop. So it's basically a cry for help.
Yeah.
Like John Travolta and Bolt.
Yeah.
Hello, listener, and welcome to this, episode 30 of The Big Red Couch. On the microphone today we have...
Kev.
Tonya.
Ben.
And Craig.
Not to mention, outside, Scratchy Joe, Skorky Pete, and the Rooster of Horror.
Opening for Wild Stallions at the Burbank Arena. What?
They will be audible.
They will.
Constantly audible.
One of the interesting things I found out with the noise removal tool in Audacity, if I select a particular cicada noise, it will only mute that cicada.
Yep.
They have distinctive voices. I hadn't realised until I tried that. So, anyway.
It's pretty cool.
But also scratchy.
Yeah. There will be sizzling noises.
It is just one of the things that we have to put up with broadcasting from a...
swamp.
Subtropical... Are we subtropical or are we still temperate?
Subtropical.
Mm-hmm. That's broadcasting from the subtropical paradise that is Auckland.
Indeed.
And a swamp in Auckland.
It's not a swamp.
We're surrounded by mangroves on three sides. We're a swamp.
I stand correct. All right. Our card for today comes to us from Just Dave and the Thursday Gamers of Montreal. Woo! And reads Apollo Rising.
Cool.
So, who wants to kick off? I've got, like, an idea and then a bad joke.
Whereas I've got a book jacket, sort of back of book blurb rather than a game.
Okay.
I could start, if you like.
Yeah, if you like. Okay. You, as it were, kick this pig and...
get this out of the way. Apollo is a dark listening station. Apollo is a downed ship. Apollo is a small colony. Apollo is a forgotten god, most of all by himself. Apollo is a cloud-intelligent microbe swarm. Apollo is all of these.
I like it.
I kind of get the impression of this being a progression through this entity's lifetime kind of thing.
Interesting.
That is extremely cool.
It's evocative, but I'm not sure it's going anywhere.
So what have we got? We've got listening station, you've got downed ship, you've got forgotten god.
There was a small colony in there.
Small colony, and...
cloud intelligent microbe swarm. I'm willing to transpose microbe and nanite.
Yeah. Interesting. What could you do with that?
Does it imply an evolutionary path between these stages, or sort of discrete...
If you went with Apollo, sort of Apollo in inverted commas, being some form of machine intelligence, then you've got the Apollo expert system that started out as part of a listening station filtering for data, and then through upgrades and revisions and developments, it ends up as the AI of a ship which crashes somewhere. Possibly, if we
possibly
go with
the listening station itself was a ship in orbit, it crashes somewhere. The expert system is cobbled into a small colony as part of their, I don't know.
If you swap small colony and forgotten a forgotten god in the in the order of things, then what you've got is this crashed ship that there's a small, a colony that backslides, and the only technological thing that's really left is this ship with an AI that's still working.
Mm-hmm.
The god of their colony.
That occasionally tells them how to do stuff because they've forgotten.
Indeed. And has maybe forgotten where on earth it came from.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the image that I had was, you had this ship that crashes and it becomes the centerpiece of this community and is then itself forgotten. So you'll have other people, archaeologists from the future or something, digging down through these ruins and something wakes up and starts talking to them.
Nice.
So it became revered as a god by people that didn't really understand what was going on because it was so knowledgeable, and then they themselves forgot.
Nice.
Hmm.
And then later you've got a jump of micro-life that can pick up data information.
Mm.
Somehow it manages to make the jump between...
Just a rise of nanotech, sort of destructive uploading to nanotech clouds, as in Transmetropolitan had that?
Yep, among other things, but Transmet did a good spin on it.
Mm. Diaspora as well, Greg Egan, as a central concept.
Cute.
I'm wondering, game-wise, if an approach would be to have somebody discovers this apparently primitive world with this wacky religion that they have, and they find out, amazingly enough, it works. The sacrifices and so forth these people, the offerings that people make, seem to have the desired effect. And it's because this ship that's been largely buried and lost or built up around in the middle of the civilization has enough, say it has swarms of nanites or something it control, to manifest its powers. And it's basically been playing the role of caretaking the descendants of the people it crashed with. And the peeling back that mystery might be a sort of a game scenario. Okay.
Archaeological investigation, the RPG, yeah.
Mm.
While I was thinking of this, I had this one image in my mind that was a little bit creepy. Does anyone remember the music video for Total Eclipse of the Heart?
Yes.
Yes.
We're talking literal or actual?
Words don't matter. I'm thinking specifically the image of a bunch of very similar-looking people, silhouetted, but with their eyes shining in the darkness. And sort of like thinking of Voice of Apollo, it's like, these are normal people living out their everyday life. Someone prays to Apollo, the nearest cluster of people will start talking in unison.
Greek chorus, as it were.
Indeed. that's
shades of the Midwich Cuckoos and a certain M83 video.
Mm.
I think it's M83. M81.
Show notes.
Show notes, yeah.
Show notes.
My apologies to fans of the band, whatever the hell they're called.
And if you're looking for something that's a little shorter term than cultural anthropology, the RPG, then you could maybe have a group of player characters who are picked from among the villagers by the Voice of Apollo to come find the ship that is its core. So the swarm is everywhere, like Ben suggests, but there are memory banks it doesn't have access to anymore, so it needs certain things that need a bit of maintenance, but it doesn't remember where it is.
Mm.
If I was going to be running that, I would either do it as something needs maintenance, and so you've got it's picked people
who might have those skills or close enough.
Have something close to the skills that they can do the job, or you hit them with the out of context problem that you've got this. Yeah, it's not even a lost colony. It's a colony that was never part of anywhere.
Mm.
Yeah, you've got people somehow, but it's not like they remember their glorious days of starfaring and how they got to this world. They've always been here, and then the outside universe makes contact, and the Apollo
all this time has been sending out a distress signal. Somebody finally answered.
Maybe it's a distress signal, maybe it isn't, but somebody finally answered, and maybe the Apollo system can see something that isn't apparent to the primitive screwheads. Hey, those guys who arrived on the beach in the enormous wooden ships that are bigger than any longhouse you've ever built, and they've got the strange clothing, and they've got the iron weapons and everything.
Mm-hmm.
These are not necessarily your friends, but you don't see that yet.
Hmm. Right.
Maybe it's a case of trying to get out a warning, but Apollo already has a communication system. Maybe it's a case of, okay, we need to get some systems that haven't worked in thousands of years up and running. We need the defensive We need the defensive systems again.
Or the fabricators to make, you know, equivalent weapons.
Or... yeah.
Or possibly we have a small group of the people who are closest to having the skill set I need. We get them to a place where I can upgrade them properly.
Okay.
We cross over
Shades with of Battlefield Earth.
We make them, we have a bit of a crossover with a previous show and create the first Titans.
Woo!
Planet. Anyway.
Interesting. That does kind of cross over with my very, very vague semi-idea, but just to bridge that, I'm interested by the notion that gods, and especially Greek gods, so we're not doing the chariot of the gods style stuff, but in general, Greek gods were capricious, unpleasant, bad to cross, and kind of dickholes a lot of the time.
They were people.
Yeah, but they were
people who could do big things.
Yeah, so I wonder what the idea that yes, your ancient Greek civilization has basically been visited by people with sufficiently advanced technology who are just roaming around being bastards.
Yeah.
So it's equivalent to that douchebag who throws his rubbish over your fence and runs his car engine at stupid times of night, except he has awesome cosmic power.
Yes.
Okay.
So I did a little bit of reading about Apollo, and he's got a bunch of conflicting fields of influence. But one of the repeated things, apart from sleeping around, which is very much a...
It was the style of the time.
It very much was the... If people had the temerity to compare themselves to the gods, which, interestingly, because they're paragons of their various attributes, is kind of invited. Mm-hmm. Everyone has the temerity to do so. They generally set up some sort of wacky competition they can't possibly win. And then hubris happens, which is basically them
being... The god kicks your ass or cheats.
Generally both, from what I saw.
Yeah.
Kicks your ass while cheating. Excellent.
Yeah, so it's like, wow. The idea of say, is taking on, going from a effectively a subjugated primitive culture and taking on, having this jump in intuition that the gods are not crazy, just bastards, and managing to jump on them. And that would be an interesting thing, because it's not a well-regarded trope in role-playing, but the... We've killed five Tiamats and seven Bahamats. would make more sense in that context.
It kind of would. Okay, so you're pitching a thing where you have kind of a who's the best god Olympic Games competition thing. Mortals can apply if they like, but...
That would be an interesting setting, but the notion that the supplicant party, the mere mortals of the realm go... Someone makes a breakthrough, a tiny jump that basically say, oh, that's what a god is. We can do something about that.
I am imagining this done either as a game or possibly as a published module, assuming those really exist outside of Pathfinder and D&D verse anymore.
Well, they have in the past.
Yeah. I'm imagining something that is a direct parody of the Gods Must Be Crazy movie cover, except it's the gods are hooting dick bags.
Actually, no, what I appear to be pitching is The Boys Black Toga Edition.
I'm not going to lie to you. I would play the shit out of that game.
So the players are people who are...
taking it to the gods.
Humans who have a reason to disapprove of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
Have figured out how to boost themselves a bit.
Yep, so they've gotten some access to the ambrosia or whatever enhances the gods' godly powers or something that picks them up, and have decided to do something about the situation.
Yes, and these pegs, we should take you down a few. Cool.
Well, going back to the idea of the long lifespan of this entity called Apollo thing that you were thinking of, I think it would be interesting to flip it around and actually say... what would it look like if you had a game that was over this ridiculously extended time frame and have people be elements of this thing that outsiders will look at and say is a singular entity called Apollo, and it's not.
Oh.
But look at it in terms of... there was some stuff I read recently that was starting to be this really extended time frame. There was a David Brin story that has happened to be quite nuts called... existence or something, which skipped the most interesting parts of the story for some reason, but it did have the idea of uploaded entities over ridiculous spans of time and how they were trying to relate to the outside world.
Okay.
And there was another one that was more relevant that I can't unfortunately remember which one it was, but the idea of that you've been a ship, listening post, all these things have happened, you've crashed, stuff, things, and all these things. So if we're thinking of it in terms of campaigns or things, that every milestone or something is a few hundred years.
Oh, okay. So you're playing a couple of weeks out of each chunk.
Mm.
A significant event.
Yeah.
And rather than being a thing that is Apollo, you are a group of things that make up Apollo.
Basically the people looking in from outside will say, that is a mind.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in fact it's autonomous mechanical repair bot 437, aerial reconnaissance machine AJ-15, etc.
Take me to all your Kirk unit.
Indeed.
All of which are nanoclouds.
Mm.
Overlapping nanoclouds.
And since nobody can distinguish them, they're the same thing.
They're linked by intent, or they're linked by the way they've interacted with the world. So there is, it's not just a coincidence that these boxes of parts are connected in this way. There's some sort of principle that guides them along. Mm.
They're indistinguishable from the outside.
Okay.
Like you said.
Yeah. Well, it's in fact the, sort of reminds me of the idea that, yes, when you stand far enough away, a government is
one entity.
But as soon as you look closer, even if you go with just the apparatus of state, you know, the state is one entity. But when you look closer, it's lots of little bits. So, yeah.
Hmm.
Was the Men Against the Gods thing your pitch or something that was sparked by...
That's pretty much what I came up with right then.
Okay.
Ah, right.
Yeah, so that was part of vaguely what I've been thinking about, but yes, we talked about Preacher beforehand, and yes, that all kind of naturally fell together.
The idea of somebody who's got their personal life goal, you know, they've got a list of things that they wrote down many years ago on this scroll, and one by one they're crossing them off, and it's sort of a avenge this, do that, solve that, sort of something you're reading down. Teabag Zeus. Really, dude? Come on! Yeah,
it's nice to
it's
have
possible. It's what you might call a stretch goal.
Yes.
Nice to have things to reach for.
It'd definitely be an aspirational camp. Well, aspirational is quite the right thing, but definitely ambitious. Yeah.
Okay.
That would be a way of reframing the whole development of something like Gurren Lagann in terms of that you keep thinking there are ceilings to what you can do. You are wrong. This trend will continue.
Indeed.
Okay, reframing Ben's idea as a whole spiral power thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, so you have people in a forgotten corner of wherever this is getting all excitable and figuring out that they can power up by going, "Argh!" and eventually charging up Mount Olympus where Lord Zeus Genome is sitting there going, "You don't understand the price of spiral power."
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily thinking exactly spiral power, but that kind of thing. Because in terms of something where you have an understanding of the world, it's wrong. You develop a new understanding of the world and your place in it. It's wrong. You prove this by beating it up.
Yeah.
And it just keeps going.
Yes, the escalation is the important thing.
Yeah.
It's definitely a part of the framework of more traditional role-playing games. The idea that, yes, we've started Cthulhu, we can totally go and kick him in the nuts.
It's going to take a while.
Granted.
Yes, we are going to have to build an enormous rig based on some bizarre combination of mining equipment, a trebuchet, and a crane, with a size 8-100 boot filled with cement at the end of it, and we need to get him into just the right place, but yes, we can get in a blatant ball shot on Cthulhu. Okay, I'm just imagining a Neon Genesis-style thing where, okay, we're luring him, he's coming around the corner, okay, go! Somebody cuts the cable, the counterweights go, just this enormous boot filled with concrete swings around in this ponderous arc, possibly with speed lines, and nutshots Cthulhu for no sensible reason other than to hear what it sounds like when a tic-tacular star priest says,
I am imagining boot cam as it comes swinging around so that you've got Cthulhu's face looking around quizzically and the eyes going wide. All in slow motion. Yeah. All in slow motion, of course. So it's important.
Yes.
The actual idea I had was slightly... It was more of a setting.
Mm-hmm.
I did a bit of random research, reading up on the deity Apollo and his many forms and his hilarious dickery, but the way that they, as happened, they cover a lot of bases, a lot of different things, but one of his...
areas of influence.
His shticks was medicine. It was also plague. So he was
a doctor, but he wasn't very good at it.
There is actually a technical term for invoking plague so you can cure it later and look like a good guy. I didn't write it down, but it's like, oh, they have a hyperlinked term for that.
Goody.
Oh, yeah, that is.
So a god who was an angel of mercy serial killer on a massive scale.
It does appear that way, yes.
Right.
I mean, either that, or he saw it in terms of being one of those corporations that sells landmines and also prosthetic limbs.
Yeah,
yeah.
Indeed. We are creating our own market.
Indeed. So
note, corporations are evil gods.
So there was that. Just generally googling, I found that Apollo Rising is a title of a book, unshockingly enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never thought of doing that.
Yeah, according to Goodreads, among people who are very keen on paranormal romance with blue lit washboard abs on the cover, the book in question's a bit meh.
Oh wow!
Might have been about shapeshifters, werewolves, or something. And also written by, it was just like a wall of cheese grater abdominal muscles lit as sort of like a moody blue. I was like, yeah, okay. Yes, and the reviews were amazingly average. It was quite impressive. Like, wow, okay. A lot of people thought this was a book.
Satisfactory.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you come up with an intersection of the novel genre and the serial killer?
Not quite. Between that and having played through Song of Seo earlier in the week, which is unique... A piece of interactive fiction out of Japan.
Uh-huh.
Won't go too far, but if you want your anime dating sims to resemble tool videos, that's where you go.
Just to clarify, are we talking tool videos in the... And now we're introducing the Binford 500 series of chisels and hammers?
No.
Oh, God. Oh, that's just wrong.
Yeah. So that's possibly why the notion that I had was... May spin off into Craig's because of the research we've heard about. Had the notion that during the space race, launching a vehicle out of near-Earth orbit did something. Effectively, it broke some sort of seal. There was some inviolate thing around the Earth that was perfectly preserved up until that point.
Ah, the crystal shells upon which the universe is painted.
Indeed.
Understood.
And at that point... Things started to go wrong, and the world has somehow been affected by the outer cosmos and not in a happy way.
Unfortunately, okay, so we're talking things from the outer darkness coming in, we're talking something essential of the Earth leaking out?
Probably something, yeah, it's the idea I have is like that moment where a piece of fruit turns and suddenly is clearly not ripe anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
So something from the outside starts leaking in, and...
It's not as overt as an invasion. Something maybe closer to the war against the Chitauri or something. So the eye... However, my problem is that I'm not sure if this is more so much a game pitch or a game setting or there's a reason to drop a toast into a bar. So...
it sounds a bit big to have limitations that are small... group can push against, but we can work with it. If we kind of mix a couple of the things that you've set up so that you've got the gods are dicks.
Mm.
They've been rattling around on Earth for a while. At some point, there's a space program that breaks a seal. Those things now have access to the outer universe. Without our knowledge, we have been a prison for these things.
Cool. No, I like that. Yeah.
Some time later, representatives from the rest of the universe come to Earth and say, you fucked up, you're putting them back.
You done been deputized!
Basically, yeah.
That's a good one.
Here's your spaceship and your badge.
Cool.
I like it.
Or the possibility, maybe the possibility is that as a prison, uh-huh. Earth was created to rehabilitate these entities.
We let them out early.
Yeah, or that they, and the process is supposed to go from, you take these massively upscaled psychopaths, uh-huh. you have them develop alongside an evolving culture, and somehow they get diluted and spread out, and they don't function as these dangerous badasses anymore. And maybe it's even partially useful to the civilization in question. It gives them a bit of a kickstart. Yeah, But before the process is complete, they get access to something that is effectively a jailbreak for them, or resets them back to the good old days.
So, oh, nice.
So suddenly you
have... So breaking the seal lets some power in to power these things back up to
their
absolute corruption.
Yeah, back to their Mount Olympus state, mm-hmm. and suddenly you have a modern world with actual Greek gods kicking around. That could be frightening.
Mm.
It could definitely give you an objective to...
Well, it implies that that's happening to... deity figures all over the place, so
you might want to because they're all
limited.
Yeah, you might want to limit because it's really hard to you don't get a lot of protests about people picking on Hellenistic religions at this time in history. So
it's
a little safer.
It just means that if there are player groups who want to or who feel more comfortable with a different group of gods, then they can go that way.
Cool. People who hated the Avengers movie enough that what they really, really want to do is kick Thor in the junk.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or lick him. That's...
Okay. Right.
Whatever okay. works. The whole idea that they've got loose is entertaining. Because then you can ask the philosophical question of, what does God need with a spaceship? Mailbox baseball, but with moons. Ooh. Mm. We should go fetch him.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, actually, the your comment about the total eclipse of the heart video with the glowing eyes and so forth, the reading about Apollo and looking at the Kuros, the idolized youth statues that were a big part of the cultural/religious observance, made me think of a Doctor Who alien called the Axons, and they were these sort of gilded youths with their eyes kind of covered with stylized eye-looking things, and they're also horrible tentacular blobs as well.
But only some of the time.
Only some of the time. So yes, that was the kind of thing. It's like, what were those things? Oh yeah. It's like a...
Huh.
So rather than the gods might be crazy, the gods might be psychopaths.
Hmm. Okay, the gods might be giggling psychopaths, yes.
It could be an intriguing...
Yeah. Okay, so if you're not roaming the universe attempting to put the genie back in the bottle...
What do you do?
What do you do as players in this?
This one, it would probably be the gods have reappeared, they have re-established themselves because like constant pissing matches and chaos.
Mm-hmm.
They are now squatting in different parts of the globe, building up their armies. It would be kind of like a really blown up, left behind scenario where rather than the Antichrist dominating the earth and forming his army,
mm-hmm.
You have these deities forming forces. Largely, they believe to antagonize one another and defend themselves against, they never really agreed on the past, or they're having political shenanigans between themselves. But the idea that the independent mortal people who aren't under the thrall of a particular god are trying to take them down. And it could be almost
okay,
like...
Okay, so you're representatives of the independent mortal faction.
Yeah.
Okay.
It could become like a global rather than interstellar Stargate kind of scenario.
Okay.
You've got all these nut bars flitting around on Earth.
Yeah.
Mm.
Having established themselves into various strongholds, and you could match up this god decides, this country, this group of countries, I'll take this over. And
so it's basically a post-apocalyptic scenario where people remember the present day. Gods are taken over, they've trashed everything.
It's not necessarily that they've trashed anything, they may have integrated themselves in as much as they've decided... Somebody says, well, America looks right, I'll have an America. And is
decided that they're running the place.
Okay, so that's what the gods are doing.
Yeah.
What are the
monkeys doing?
Basically try and overthrow them. Work against the power structures they've co-opted. And...
Okay, so that gives you scope for everything from a one-shot meet the new world right the way through to a campaign for life where you're starting as a squad of conscriptees and working your way up or working your way out to the borders of the conflict.
Or a cheesy supernatural pastiche.
Yeah.
Or you were all thinking it.
Mm. Also possible.
Or possibly not.
Okay.
You could have a certain amount of fun with the sort of playing the political game, as it were, of if these two gods actually go at each other in a fully-fledged war, that's going to create a lot of damage. How do we get them so riled up...
That they take each other out.
Yeah, that they do the, ha! I no need my mighty armies that I have spent 3 years building up. I will defeat you with my bare fists! No, it is you who will be defeated with bare fists! And various people in the background going, well, this is going well.
That would definitely be a profitable angle to pursue, I suspect. Actually,
yeah.
Appealing to their sense of pride and grandiose.
Attempt to con them into single combat.
Yes, let's you and him fight. So, yeah, the idea of... And, yeah, you tackled a fair way. You could take it through into a sort of, like, the gods took over, broke everything, attempting to reshape the world the way it was. Or they went, humans, they do crazy things. I'm just going to sit up here and just drop lightning bolts on people who disagree with me. Who's disagreeing with me?
Yeah, I will take over these United States. You can have the bit that they call Canada. I will take over these United States and will base myself in the very centre of it. I only know this because I looked it up the other day. It's somewhere in Kansas.
Fair enough.
geographic centre of the contiguous United States.
Yeah, cool.
They worked it out with cardboard.
Huh. I'm not going to ask. I just had a thought about offending Hellenistic religions.
Uh-huh.
As far as I know, there is only one left. Discordianism.
Okay.
And who would be just on board with overthrowing gods?
Discord. Yeah.
Okay. Should I do mine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have an idea and a bad joke.
Let's start with the joke.
Okay. I saw Apollo Rising, jumped almost immediately to Apollo Riesling, and was basically imagining a game. I don't know what the system would be. I'm not even sure why you would bother playing it. A game about the very first vineyard on the moon. And the trials and tribulations of people farming the earth underneath the big inflatable domes.
Well, farming the ground.
Farming the regolith under the big inflatable domes. Trying to stop the grapes from freezing during
night.
Two weeks of night.
Or evaporating the rest of the time.
During 2 weeks of day. All trying to get a really good bottle of white wine.
I kind of like the idea that you're not just doing that, you're also running kind of a bed and breakfast thing for people coming to Mars for 2 week day trips.
So it is in fact the...
It's just like going to wine country. I'm seeing this place where you come
Otago
in...
I go wine country B&B of the of the lunar world.
Yes, and you come in from the port in your buggy, and you know you're at the right place because you can see the various landers that the rancher has bought and is using as corner posts for the dome. Or possibly is lining the entry path to the dome with old Apollo landers and...
And no, I'm assuming you just go in there, drag out a path and leave it. I mean, there's no wind. That path's never moving.
Except on the tyres of all of the...
Well, on the tyres.
Buggers.
Yeah.
Buggers? Buggies. We can bleep that, right?
Yeah, we use all the
words. Why would we start now?
Yeah.
So
that was the dumbass idea.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out where the conflict would
that,
be.
That was the problem I came into, unless you possibly do it as a narrative game, so possibly in the style of, say, The Quiet Year or something like that, where what you're talking about, you know, what you're doing is a narrative-y storytelling game about...
Setting this up, or...?
About, or possibly just running it, about the farm, about those really annoying guests who came, about the time that ship crashed nearby and we had to go out and rescue them, this kind of thing.
Hmm.
You just sort of wrap a story, yeah, this is sort of the focal point of the game, but doesn't actually have that much impact on things.
So this is news from Lake Wobegon, the game, Lunar Edition.
Yes.
Awesome. I want to play.
Okay. You still make moving on the RPG. Which I suppose means that Welcome to Night Vale is Tales from Lake Wobegon, Stephen King edition, or H.P. Lovecraft edition.
There is a community radio RPG which people are developing.
Should check that out. Yes, the more serious one I went with concerned the Apollo program, the actual moonshot spaceflight Apollo program.
Mm.
More specifically, what they called the Apollo Applications Program.
Okay.
Which was essentially the... Well, we've built these big fuck-off rockets, and we can lift pretty heavy things with these big fuck-off rockets. What can we do with that? And so there were the various plans, which obviously never happened, though I'm pitching a setting in a game in which they did, where rather than stopping at Apollo 17,
mm-hmm.
the program continued. They went with the various even more extended stay landers.
Okay.
They went with some designs of lander, which were still the traditional lunar lander that we've seen, except it was never designed to take off again.
So you land a bunch of these nearby to each other to start making a little lunar village?
Pretty much. You start building up infrastructure. There were plans. Yeah, I'm not sure if they were ever got to plans in the extent of, yes, we know exactly how we're going to build these, so much as specifications and we've done the numbers and we think they'll work,
mm-hmm.
for longer and longer stays, getting more stuff to the surface, getting an extended range pressurized vehicle
mm-hmm.
for lunar exploration.
So less of a buggy and more of a bus.
Indeed. And yeah, something I only found out about today, which was hilarious, was things that had been looked at but never developed for lunar escape systems. Because the problem with any piece of machinery, particularly something in that harsh an environment, is the longer it's there, the more chance there is that it's not going to work when you turn it back on again. And it was something there were valid concerns about with the lunar landers, that
mm-hmm.
what the hell do you do if the thing doesn't work when you try to take off?
Sing sad songs of the sea, I suspect.
Pretty much. Well, yeah, nobody ever built them, but there was the notion of a lunar escape system, which would have essentially been, it would be generous to call it a seat.
Mm-hmm.
With one of those eight-ball tracking things and a timer and a few other things. It would have collapsible fuel tanks because you'd fill it up with the fuel from the ascent fuel from the lander because you weren't going to be using that.
Uh-huh.
And it would be basically something that an astronaut could sit on that had enough thrust to get them into orbit.
I'm having some Kerbal Space Program flashbacks at this point.
I have seen things that people have built that are basically these. They are a fuel in Kerbal Space Program. They are a fuel tank with a seat on it and an insane Kerbal and some rocket motors. Yeah, this is working to the, yeah, this would go with the extent of it wouldn't even have life support. You'd be going off what was available from the backpack.
So you're hoping that the suit you're wearing is strong enough to survive any inertial issues as you take off?
It would be strong enough to survive. It wouldn't be a lot of thrust, but okay. It's more a case of you'd want to time your rendezvous with the guy in the command module well, because you haven't got a lot of time.
Okay, so yeah. You're not riding all the way home on this. This is just for escape, right?
This is just for escape. Yeah. But yeah, just basically I was sort of looking at these, and yes, I imagined a world where the Apollo program continued, where the space race continued,
mm-hmm.
maybe where the Soviet Union went to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got these clusters of bases in various places. You've got the old hardware.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the slowly being upgraded hardware. You've got these bases. You've got the landers. You've got the Soviet LK landers, as seen in things like
Apollo 18.
Apollo 18 and Wikipedia. And yeah, you basically have a good, solid space race occurring on the moon. Maybe you're not actively shooting at each other, because that seems rude and incredibly fatal. But a whole lot of that good old Cold War espionage and, okay, the Russians landed a couple of their landers in a place, near a place where we landed, back in the early days of the Apollo program. Why? What did they figure out that we didn't? Send some people to spy on them.
Or did they just misunderstand the signal that thing was putting out as one of their later signals?
Depending on how you how deeply down the rabbit hole of moon landing conspiracies you want to go, maybe you have the...
They found the set for the Mars landing.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
I was thinking...
20 kilometres of the moon that we spray painted red.
Oh, also around the back. Maybe you find the two or three Soviet, one-man Soviet lunar landers which got to the moon, but the pilot never survived, and so they never advertised it.
Nice.
If you want to go with some of the completely nuts theories, you find the remains of the various Luknod probes and the poor bastard who was inside that.
Oof.
That one is legitimately nuts. There's not enough room. not big enough.
Space midgets.
Small person?
Pardon?
Yeah, space midgets.
Space midgets, yes. Space midgets, the very thing. Yeah, and there was a plan for the manned Venus flyby mission using Apollo technology. Would have taken a year.
And they asked all of the astronauts, and the astronauts said, maybe?
I suspect most of the ones if they had been asked, would have said, yes.
That's true.
But yeah, so that's where I went with that. I'm just imagining effectively dusty, grey, science fiction, Cold War stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably set the thing on the moon. I mean, there was the notion of using the technology of the lunar escape platforms as a point-to-point transport for the moon, because it doesn't take a lot of thrust and a lot of fuel to move around at 1/6 G.
You can still fall, though, which is the issue.
You can still fall, you can still crack your faceplate and die a lot.
Mm.
But, yeah, I kind of like the idea of a game where you've got these bases and everybody's watching each other and you've got to be on the lookout, because once you've got enough people from either program kicking around on the moon, if you've got actual resupply runs happening, you know, there's always the chance that somebody's a double agent.
I have an idea for basically using that as the starting point of things, and then something exciting happens and you have to work it out from there.
You have to team up.
You've got this network of bases on the moon. You've got multiple countries, at the very least Soviet Union and the US, who have these bases. They've got a permanent, each has permanent presences on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
They've each just started to get basic manufacturing facilities up on the surface. Very big PR thing, and it's being thought of as more a PR thing than anything else. And then a country which doesn't currently have a foothold on the moon, but is concerned about this space race accelerating away from them, does one of the things that we saw as a plot line in Planets and came up in World War Z and other things, and detonates something in orbit so that we get this global debris field. Nothing can come in. Nothing can go out.
So you have a very dependent cluster of colonies that are suddenly have to rely on each other if they're going to survive at all.
Yep.
Which is kind of a big question.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you've got Wild West on the moon with Ruskies.
There was a Ben Bova book that I've forgotten the name of that had something similar, yeah.
Yeah,
not,
but just
not that exact thing.
That you've got this kind of context of paranoia and double agents and everything else, and it's basically a whole bunch of people having to come in and say, okay, the only resources we have access to are the resources we currently have and can make. How about we all lay some cards on the table and we try not to die over the years it's going to take us to build cleanup rigs and start cleaning up orbit?
Assuming that they do.
Assuming that they do. Assuming that they can.
Yeah.
Because if anyone's going to be able to do it, it has to be us, because they can't launch anything. Mm. Debris field!
Yeah.
Mm.
And so you could basically have this very, we are totally working together at the same time as totally convinced that we're not.
If I was doing it as a campaign, I think I'd do it as a two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have the that orbital detonation as it were, the mid-season break event.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got enough time to set up shadowy Cold War into play.
Yeah.
You've got villains. You've got people who are definitely on the bad guy's side, but aren't necessarily
bad
a bad guy. Just because you are a bad guy doesn't mean you are a bad guy in territory. You can have all of those things, and then you throw the wrench at their head.
Yeah.
Mm.
Dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Yes, that made me think of an 80s British sci-fi series done by the same guy who wrote Blake 7.
Terry Nation?
Not Terry Nation.
Okay.
I think my memory has failed on me today, but it was very much a Cold War in the 80s kind of thing. But the idea of you flipping it around, so suddenly they have to be the best example of human cooperation ever, or they're dead. And humanity may be trapped on Earth and, you know, growling at one another.
Forever.
Forever. So
or more accurately, the length of time it'll take.
Yeah, for everything.
To stagnate and die out. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's appealing. That's really quite an interesting. And you're right. It would be best to set it up so that it felt real. That you have sort of your amicable foes and your creepy suspect people and so forth. And suddenly you're all thrown together as fellow survivor.
Mm.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome.
I think you could riff on the Babylon 5. I mean, the Babylon 5 first season Jakar thing is an awesome one to riff on because he's presented as the
angry young man.
He was representative of an angry, warlike race. He's the bad guy, he's the bad guy. And then completely out of the blue, he goes and does something charitable and helpful, and he saves somebody's life for no reason other than...
it needed doing.
Because it needed doing.
And he seems to be the only one who believes the creeping terror coming around the corner. And, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, so
I mean, that would be interesting.
Yeah, if you could get some of that on either side.
Yeah.
And you can have all sorts of interesting possibilities, because some of the rumours going around various space programmes, I don't think it was ever actually substantiated, but you had things where certain people in space programmes were there because it was politically convenient for that to happen. They were given a position of responsibility, so it wasn't something that their supporters could use to agitate about them being ignored. And at the same time, it was completely tangential to relevant politics. So you could have someone who's on the moon. What do they do? We don't know, but you've very much got this plain and simple Garrick person who you're practically certain has been sent to the moon from Russia to stop them from causing trouble somehow.
Mm. Yeah,
just that kind of thing on both sides.
I've had an idea for game structure for this.
Yeah?
That for season one, as it were,
mm.
that you actually have two separate player groups, possibly three separate player groups,
ooh.
Very small, that are responding to each other's, what each other are doing.
So they're on opposite sides.
They're literally on opposite sides. They're literally separate. They're seeing the shadows of the actions that other player groups are taking and responding in kind. And when you pull the debris field, you pull them all into the same player group.
What would be really funny was if they didn't know about each other to start with. So you're just thinking, the GM's being really creative and dickish this week. And it turns out, actually, no, that was Susan. Because that way you could actually have a, that was you, kind of thing. And then it's just, and now you have to work together. Play nice, hugs.
Kiss, love, mustache.
Yeah.
Remember that meteor strike? It was us standing on the other side of the crater, hooking rocks at you.
That would be nasty. I like it.
I would want to sort of decorate the game world with as many designs and pictures and visualizations of the technology of the era as I could.
Mm.
Yeah, just so it's a case of, okay, and crossing over the ridge line, and there is one of these parked in the crater. What the hell is that?
Interesting.
Oh, okay, so something that is not recognisably the bubbly but heavy designs from Russia, or the angular tissue paper and mylar that you get from the States.
Well, there were a lot of designs over the years. There were a lot of pencil sketches and doodlings, and how do we take what we have and make something bigger? I mean, a certain amount of the Apollo applications program was, given what we already have, what can we do?
Mm.
Sort of, okay, what if we take one of those and we swap out that engine, we swap in a couple of these?
The very Kerbal Space Program.
A very Kerbal Space Program. Mm.
I've had an idea for this whole kind of story thing.
Yep.
And then it's good to me that you've got three phases of story. If in very broad trends, I'm not thinking seasons, you could spin this out forever. You've got the situation, what is normal,
yep.
of the learning about the Cold War thing and people being concerned about double agents and everything else. You've got the wrench thrown at head moment of you have to survive. And then there's after that. What happens if these people do manage to work together and do survive? You've got this thing where they're completely unreachable from the world, but communication gets through real easy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the same time, what's it going to look like after 15, 20 years where you've got this group of people who
are now have a working community.
A working community, despite the fact that they're nominally allied to conglomerate nations very much still at each other's throats, and they do clean up orbit. What now? Do they not have more in common with each other on the moon than anything else? So you've got this kind of, do we secede?
Yep.
You know, at that point, we've had kids together who've grown up in microgravity.
Yep.
Who can't go home.
There are loonies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be a really interesting kind of thing to run as a core sample, but basically you could tell very interesting stories at any step along those timelines. I think the most interesting initial step would be the this is normal and then wrenched ahead.
Mm.
But then the bit later on will also be really interesting as well.
Yeah, because that gets you... And the initial thing gets you a couple of six-month campaigns, I think.
Mm.
So you want a good long time of getting used to this is how it is before you change the paradigm on them.
Yeah. I mean, you could also just have the the paradigm shift of what's it going to look like when you've been given direct orders from your superior of you will shut the Russians out of such and such. No, we're not going to do that. Yes, you will. How about you make me? Huh? How's that working out? No.
I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. Crackle, crackle, crackle.
A failure in the AE-35 communications unit.
Also, there'd be a very valid point that's like the Russian. That would probably mean the Russians would be unable to share their hydroponics with us, and we would starve to death. So, not doing that.
Yeah, or just very obviously looking up from the camera says, Dimitri, we're not doing that. No, good.
Okay.
And so you've got multiple charges of international treason, all sorts of exciting things.
Yeah.
As if I will attend the court martial when you come and get me.
Yeah. So that would be an interesting
segment. Hurry, I'm not as young as I used to be.
So you are telling me you're going to exile me to Siberia.
Where it is warmer.
Yeah. So do I have to deliver myself there, or will this be a pickup mission?
But yeah, so
perhaps I could exile myself to Mars instead. It would be easier from here.
Yeah.
Not sure that's true, but...
Well, actually, that would be an interesting philosophical question. If you had these groups of people who were basically looking at the world and going, well, we could clean up orbit, but then they might actually come after us. Or, how do we start a Mars mission together and laugh at them down in their little hole?
There is a distinct decision to be made whether they clean up orbit or whether they colonise it. Mm. They own orbit. Mm. So this group suddenly... Sure.
We'll clean it up, but we're leaving our bases where you can see them.
Yeah.
All you have to do is look up.
Actually setting up different... What would be really interesting if the players wanted to be mean, and they probably would, was set up situations where you have patches of orbital debris moving in different directions because the explosion threw everything. So you clean up high orbit, you clean up low orbit, and at particular times you can tell people, and your exit window is coming up, so you basically... build an orbital Suez Canal and control trade.
Yep.
Interesting. So it's that gives you the toll gate.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. You have an orbital window in 57 minutes. It closes in 59 minutes. Don't be late.
So considering we're already figuring out ways of min-maxing the economy and trade with this, it sounds like a rich... environment for a storytelling context.
The only other one that actually came up as we were sitting here was, unfortunately, taking the movie Iron Sky...
and making it less shit.
That too.
Less comedy Nazis?
Much fewer comedy Nazis. Practically no comedy Nazis, in fact.
Uh-huh.
Maybe one. One comedy Nazi, and that's because he was the pad technician.
Right.
I'm imagining very much the Cold War thing. If we go with the whole... My favourite Apollo moon landing conspiracy has never been the hoax ones. It's always been that there were extra landings after number 17.
Mm.
There were super secret landings.
That we don't get to hear about because aliens.
Or something, yeah. Aliens. Aliens is a good one, yeah. Because of aliens. Yes, I'm just imagining something where, and it's wildly implausible, that essentially there has been this Cold War on the moon.
Uh-huh.
There were extra Apollo launches. There were actual Soviet moon landings. There has been this Cold War, or possibly at least warm shooting war, going on the moon ever since. It's still going on. When, a new moon landing, a new phase of moon landing and space exploration occurs. They land on the moon in 2025. And there's just shit everywhere.
That would be, China or India arrives and they touch down this field full of destroyed tanks and things lying around like, what
the hell happened here?
Also, how did they get all this shit up here?
Presumably they've been building it on the moon. Yeah, you've got the underground factories. You've got all of the wacky ideas of you dig a trench, you inflate a plastic bubble into it, then you get lunar regolith and you pile it over the top to protect you against micrometeors. And there's the start of your base and you start mining and all that sort of thing. And they've had this just colossal Cold War thing that's going on. I don't know whether it's been forgotten or ignored.
Or maybe it's automated.
Eesh. That's been going on. And then, yes, somebody steps out of their new lunar capsule and says, what?
I was thinking very second variety, that you've got this... automated warfare between these two different sides.
And they've just been quietly going at it, hammer and tongs.
Yeah.
For years.
And getting more complicated. I mean, the other interesting thing from there is at what point humanity gets invaded from space, from the moon,
by
very confused robots that are just looking for more resources for their endless lunar warfare. And they've been left unregulated for a development cycle of decades, and so they're still building IFFs for each other.
Nothing that any...
wouldn't pick up the early attack.
Mm. Ooh.
Hmm. Anyway, did Kiv have an idea?
I did. Mine is deeply stupid, and yeah, it was basically down to not having an idea about Apollo Rising and thinking that Apollo Rising sounded like a really gung-ho action Tom Clancy film or something. And so I thought about a game where it's a bit like Leverage or Crime World from the Fate Worlds books or something, and basically you have this crew of people who are trying to steal back a movie.
Right, okay, so it's about getting to the cans...
or the script.
Containing the movie.
Or if you know that this film is being made, except they've put this really gung-ho title on something that was originally going to be totally different, and now it's a star project for Shia the Beef or whatever the hell his name is. And no.
And you're the guy who originally wrote the script.
Yeah. And so it's you and a crew of other filmmaking people who are going to infiltrate this set and either steal it back so that they can't make it and that you do it and basically pull the Terry Gilliam thing with Brazil, or you infiltrate knowing the Byzantine communication patterns of filmmaking and actually make a decent film under the noses of the people making it by swapping the instructions going in and out.
Huh. Shades of a Cliff Richard movie. I remember seeing Cliff Richard movie many years ago where he and
the usual suspects.
Yeah, the usual suspects ended up, I think, being kicked off the cruise ship that they were entertainment crew on, end up somewhere in the Middle East taking part in a film set and decide to shoot their own film.
On the quiet.
Yeah, on the quiet during the existing film.
Mm.
At the end of it, you've got the bit where you've got the two directors of the films who have both got these absolutely shitty films. Instead of a, doesn't work. What doesn't work with yours? With ours is this bit. Really? That worked fine with ours. It was the other bit with ours. Oh, our action scenes were fine. Well, it's going to match the two films together.
I'm amused by the concept that the behind the scenes or the documentary style, aha, we are sneaking in to do this thing,
mm-hmm.
gets swapped out for the real film and is better received than the actual.
Mm. I was thinking it was replacing it.
Yeah.
So basically they are doing that kind of parasitism where you're taking over a larger organism and convincing it to build something that's to your design and it doesn't notice.
Yeah.
I was kind of imagining this. You know, if you look really carefully around the studio and you look, go to exactly the right place and lean on the right wall panel, it'll move. And they've set up this little area that's right beside the production office. And they are quite literally, Hogan's Hero style, quite literally opening up a flap in the wall, removing the producer's note from notes from the outer tray, swapping in their own version, and then closing up, sort of putting the... putting the wall panel with the three plaster ducks on it back. Mm. This kind of thing.
Yeah,
and the production is so fraught and panic-stricken. It's like, they pick up the notes like, I don't really think about doing flamingos in this scene. Oh, well, get me flamingos!
Yeah, you know, you've got the actors going, is for just one pass. Oh, new pages. And yeah, okay. And so basically you're making two films simultaneously, but using the resources of other things so that the executive producers and stuff are seeing the version that they want to see, which won't be the one that's distributed.
Wait, so my character's a space alien now? Was he a space alien yesterday? No, I think he was from Minnesota. Okay. Was he from Minnesota the day before that? No, he was a space alien then. This project is fucked.
What is that? If one of the actors just kind of wandered past and says, well, they were in the book. What, there was a book? Yeah. And kind of just, yeah, you've got the occasional person who's in the know without actually being in the know.
I'm imagining the project office having the drinks cabinet on hinges, so it just kind of, you open the front and you see bottles of booze and glasses and stuff. You put pressure on the side of the thing, and the whole thing swings out to the cubbyhole of secret producers.
Mm.
The second project. That would be an awesome test for Crime World, actually.
Mm.
Can Crime World deal with something
as ridiculous?
Stupid.
I'm sure it can, because, I mean, it follows the same thing. You have to infiltrate, you have to identify the various things, you have to, you know, distract various directors by talking about the next project they're going to be working on. Ooh!
A good running gag or catchphrase to have in there is that, this doesn't make any sense. Ah, it's a homage to Hitchcock.
Nice.
Oh, right.
Or we'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
And all sorts of things like that. So that could be fun. Right? Yeah. Very, very much riffing on Staten Maine and Bowfinger and a whole bunch of those films. Films of their films.
Nice.
All right.
Well, I think we've all set our pieces and...
Yes.
So that was Apollo Rising.
Yeah.
Wow.
That worked better than I was expecting, because I didn't actually think I was going to get much out of, hey, space exploration with old tech. It'd be like Space 1999, but more capsular.
And fewer sock monsters.
And fewer sock monsters. And less atomic waste dumps, at least at first.
Well, thank you for joining us, audience. That was Apollo Rising.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
Roman Empire in space.
Ooh.
I was trying to come up with a, oh yes, the Space Roman Empire. Why, they went everywhere.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to HOARDE.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 Unported from CreativeCommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at Krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!